I actually was able to go to Rio de Janeiro and watch an athlete from my country run in my shoe and win a silver medal. I started in the Jordan brand working on kids' footwear, which was a really valuable experience because you face some unique challenges working on children's shoes that you don't face working on adult shoes. There's my shoe. And I'm going nuts. I was like, that's it. I don't care. The only thing that I want to be is a Nike footwear developer.
Hi, I'm Jillian.
And I'm Pierre, and you're listening to Breaking Through Careers, the podcast that gets your career questions answered.
Each episode, we speak to an ordinary person from a well-known or not so well-known profession so that we can find out what they do on a day-to-day basis and what they did in order to get there.
What do you most like about your job?
What do you actually do day-to-day?
What advice would you give someone?
What do you find most challenging about your job?
How do you balance your family and
your career?
Tell us something you're really bad at.
How much do you get paid? Welcome back to part two of the Footwear Developer. So in part one, we heard a very interesting fact about Portland, Oregon. I learned how to pronounce Nike, and we also heard Xavier's eventful journey that got him through the doors of the Nike World Headquarters. Let's now get inside the head and job of a so-called sneaker geek.
So I took the job working at the Nike retail store because technically that made me a Nike employee. So they couldn't kick me off campus for loitering or trespassing. So what I would do when I was working at the store, if I wasn't working at the store, I would go to the Nike World Headquarters and just sit there. Like I would go to one of the cafeterias and I would sit in the cafeteria till I saw somebody that I knew. I knew three people.
The headquarters are probably big.
So yeah, it's huge. So I did a lot of sitting, but while I was doing that sitting, I had time to think and time to learn my way around. I would go to different buildings. I would walk around the campus until I stopped walking around like I was at Disneyland. Because if you love sports, the Nike World Headquarters is like Disneyland. Yeah. There's giant, like 30-foot tall posters that line the campus of all of your favorite athletes, the greatest athletes in the world and in history. The buildings are named after legendary athletes, and it's legitimately Disneyland if you like sports. And so the first time that you go to the Nike World Headquarters, and I know that your listeners aren't going to be able to see this look, but the first time you go, you look like this.
In awe.
And so I told myself, I'm going to walk around until I don't have that look on my face anymore. And so I would walk around. I would get lost. I'd find my way. I learned the names of all the buildings, which ones were next to which ones, and started to move like a Nike employee moved, like the people who I wanted to be. Yeah. And I knew I was on the right path when one day someone stopped me and was like, excuse me, do you know where such and such building is? And I was like, oh yeah. So you're going to go right down this path and you're going to turn right. And if you hit the lake, you went too far. And I was like, yo, did you just do that? Now, mind you, like I don't even work there yet. Like I'm just there. But I've always had this belief, like ever since I lived in Japan, there's no substitute for being where you want to be. There's a quote I heard. I don't know who originally said it, but I think I heard it from Denzel Washington. He said, if you spend enough time in a barbershop, eventually you're going to get a haircut. So my life has taught me that if there's somewhere you want to be there in whatever capacity you can be there. So I started doing that. And the three people that I knew turned into many, many more people across a bunch of different functions. And I started to learn, what does this person do? Who do they do it with? What do these people do? Until I had a really good picture of the landscape and the interconnections between a bunch of different roles at Nike and was able to start to figure out, what things I was interested in. And eventually I focused in on footwear development. I had a passion for making things. I loved shoes. And that ultimately became the place that I felt spoke to me. And so I set out in earnest to become a footwear developer. And I actually had this really cool experience. He was a developer at the time who worked on football cleats, American football cleats. And he showed me his workspace and was showing me a bunch of his projects. And he actually gave me the opportunity to help him with a project. Now, when I say help, it's like when a little kid helps their mom bake chocolate chip cookies.
Give me this.
Yeah, it's like it's already measured out. You just pour it in, you stir it, you spend more time licking the spoon than you do like actually making cookies. But like you helped, like you got some exposure to the process. And that was his idea because he had come from retail too. And he said, this will help you to start to get familiar with the process. And then when you get to the point where you get an interview, you'll be able to have something that you can show in the interview to be like, I made this. And so got to work on a project. It ended up being the shoe that Marshawn Lynch, the running back for the Seattle Seahawks.
Oh, no. The beast mode.
It was the shoe that beast mode wore the year that the Seahawks won the Super Bowl.
No.
So my first ever project as a footwear developer was Beast Mode Super Bowl shoe.
Dude, can I just say, your level coolest went from here, that's just like here.
Pierre can't contain himself.
I can't. I'm not finished.
So the way that footwear works is because there's lead time on it, there's not enough time from the time that you know who's going to be in an event until the event happens to be able to make a shoe. So you have to start way in advance and just hope that they get there. So the Super Bowl is like the end of January. I worked on the shoe in like October, November. So for like the next 2 or 3 months, I'm just like, please just let the Seahawks get to the Super Bowl. Like, and it put me in a bit of an ideological spot because my team is the Pittsburgh Steelers.
I see the hat.
So, but I was able to rationalize it because the Steelers are in one conference and the Seahawks are in the other conference. So I didn't have to root against the Steelers. Like they could conceivably both get to the Super Bowl and I'd be okay.
Yeah.
Because I just needed him to get there because if he gets there, he wears the shoe. Unfortunately, my Steelers didn't make it, but the Seahawks did. And Beast Mode scored a touchdown in the shoe. And because it's the Super Bowl, they show everything 1,000 times. In slow motion from 1,000 different angles. So they show a view of him like running through a pile of people into the end zone and slow motion. There's my shoe. And I'm going nuts.
I'm going nuts for you now.
I was like, that's it. I don't care. The only thing that I want to be is a Nike footwear developer.
Oh my God.
And so that was my first shoe. So I want to say a special thank you to Andy Campbell for giving me that opportunity because it really, truly changed my life. It's something that I'll never forget and has absolutely influenced my entire career at Nike. So thank you so much.
Shout out
to Andy.
So that was my first shoe ever. It was probably about 4 or 5 months after that project landed that I finally got hired. So I was at the retail store for about 12 months, year and a half. And a couple months after the Super Bowl, I had landed my first job, which was in Nike running.
Wow.
And it was a really exciting time to come into Nike running. One, because Nike started as a running company. So running is very much the heart and soul of the company. And I started in 2014, which was 2 years before the Rio Olympics. And because of the time that it takes to develop a shoe, the work for Rio had already started and was well underway. So getting to running at that time, there's a huge buzz and a ton of energy in the group because this is where running shines, is at the Olympics, because athletics is such a huge part of the Olympics. And so the whole world is watching, and that's where like Nike running like really shows up. That was really exciting, starting there, learning there, and then the next kind of magic project shows up. I ran track in high school and loved sprints. And there was kind of a project that came up at the last second, because they were refreshing all of the footwear for the Olympics. So they wanted all the shoes to be brand new models, ready to go for the Olympics. And there was a 200 meter sprint spike that hadn't been developed yet. And my senior, she was responsible for all of the track and field footwear. And she knew that I loved sprints, and she knew I loved track and field. And so she said, "Hey, do you want to develop this shoe?" And I said, "Absolutely." And because of the timeline, we had some constraints. Like, there were parts of the shoe that we couldn't change because it was based on a 100 meter sprint spike. So we couldn't change the spike plate on the bottom of the shoe, and we couldn't change the material package in the upper. So we had those constraints. But I think that when you have constraints, it doesn't limit creativity, it focuses it. And so start working on this project, and nobody's really sure what direction to go with it because of those constraints. Like, how do you make a 100 meter shoe different from a 200 meter shoe? And my roommate from college, actually, credit to him, I don't know that if he knows that he actually influenced the idea for the shoe. He got me into watching NASCAR, which is American stock car racing. And it's, for anybody who's not watched NASCAR before, it's like 3 hours of turning left at high speed. And no shade to NASCAR fans. I'm a NASCAR fan. But that's the running joke about NASCAR, is it's watching people turn left for like 3 hours. But to my roommate's credit, shout out Ryan, he got me into NASCAR, became a NASCAR fan. And so when we're thinking about this shoe, and everybody's kind of at a stalemate because nobody really knows like how to make a 200 meter shoe, I start thinking about NASCAR. Because in NASCAR, you always turn left for safety reasons. So because you never turn the other direction, when you set the car up, you set it up very aggressively for the type of left turns that you're doing. When you run track, you always turn left.
Yeah.
So if you're developing a solution, a footwear solution, which is basically like a NASCAR, it's the application of force to the ground, you can set up a really aggressive solution for turning left. So came up with this idea and was able to get the insights of some world-class sprinters, which was really, really cool to work with them on developing the shoe, having them test it, provide their feedback, and came up with an idea that we ended up running with. And we had to come up with some more solutions, went back to NASCAR and said, how do they solve this problem? And figured out how to apply those concepts to a shoe. And built a shoe that the athletes loved, that one of the athletes wore in the Olympics. He actually wore it in the 100 meters because he liked it so much, and he won a silver medal in it. So that was really cool. I actually was able to go to Rio de Janeiro and watch an athlete from my country run in my shoe and win a silver medal. Okay. So.
So either that Tyson Gay or Gatlin. No, that's not
Gatlin.
Yep.
Oh my God.
So that was an amazing experience. I'm so thankful to so many people. I feel like I spend a lot of time, like, as I think about my career, just being grateful to so many people who gave me opportunities, who taught me things, who took chances on me. I wouldn't be where I am and have had the experiences that I've been fortunate to have if it wasn't for the amazing people that I've met along the way. So a sincere thank you to everybody who's been a part of my journey. So I'm at the Olympics.
What?
I had to come back because at the same time that I was working on the track spike, which was the Jawfly 3, was the name of the shoe, which a couple years later, I was actually awarded a patent for the design concept in the shoe.
Wow.
Which was super cool and unexpected. I never imagined that I would be a patent holder, but blessed to have that on my resume as well. I had to come back from Rio de Janeiro because I had to put the finishing touches on another project that I was working on for the Olympics. So in the closing ceremony of the Olympics, there's always a section where the next host country gets to kind of say, hey, we'll see you in 4 years. And so the next host country was slated to be Tokyo. So what my team wanted to do was to make a shoe for the closing ceremony of the Olympics that was basically a nod to Tokyo and to basically send the message that we're already thinking about 4 years in the future. And the project was a really, really cool project. We took the Flyknit Racer, which debuted at the London Olympics, and did a special version of it that was inspired by Japan. And we wanted to do some really rich, like, Japanese history and heritage storytelling. So we decided to do a Flyknit Racer that was hand-dyed in indigo dye in Japan.
So extra. I love it.
So that was a really cool project for a lot of reasons. Super challenging because the material that the shoe is made out of doesn't take natural dyes. So figuring out how to get the shoe to absorb the dye without using factory processes. The shoes were literally hand dyed in a small dye house. To watch the videos of it was amazing. I have a pair I can show you guys. Sorry that everybody else won't be able to see it.
Maybe we can
put some pictures on the website so that everybody can see it. But it was a really challenging project, but eventually, you know, figured it out working with the partners at Nike Japan and came up with an amazing shoe that's just beautiful and tells a really authentic story about Tokyo. There were some great details that were added to the shoe to really bring the Tokyo story to life. And the shoes had to be delivered to the people they were for the day of the closing ceremony. So we did 100 pairs and sent them to 100 people, like influencers and celebrities all over the world that the shoes went to tell this story about Tokyo and the 2020 Olympics. So that was kind of a cool 1-2 Olympic experience to go have a shoe actually in the Olympics and then to come back and do a lifestyle shoe that was also related to the Olympics. So that was really cool. A whole bunch of things I never imagined that I'd be able to do when I did them. Those are things that I was like, well, maybe one day I'll get to do it, but never imagined it would happen when it did.
I'm going to put a picture of the shoe up, but also a picture of Pierre's face right now.
I should have got a shoe of developer, I guess.
I showed you guys those. I'll show you these two, and I'll make sure you guys get pictures of these for the website. But this is the Jafly 3.
Yeah.
Wow.
These are the track spikes.
So my favorite color as well.
So this is my track spike.
Pretty much sponsored by Nike, wasn't it? All the girls like Sally, all that, they were wearing those.
So this is basically the little, like the younger sibling of the Superfly Elite, which was the 100 meter shoe.
Yeah, okay.
So that shoe, a ton of innovation and like 4 years of research and development went into making that shoe. Yeah. And then they decided that the Jafly would kind of draft off of the direction of that shoe.
Yeah. I was just telling you, like, I will send you a video of 100 meter race and all you see is everyone's on yellow shoes. Like, literally.
Yeah.
Everyone wearing them.
So yeah, that was really cool to see so much of that particular color. Because we did all of the shoes for our Olympians, regardless of what country they were from or what race. That was the colorway for all of the Olympic shoes. So if you turned on the television during athletics, yeah, regardless whether it was throws, jumps, sprints, distance, you saw that colorway. Yeah. And so that was how, like I said, it's a huge opportunity for Nike to show up in the biggest sporting event in the world. And so definitely take full advantage and make sure that the world knows we're there. So it was really cool to be a part of that the way that I was. So my time in Nike running came to an end in 2017 when there was a big corporate reorganization. And in that reorganization, I got moved to the Jordan brand. And I've been in the Jordan brand since 2017. I started in the Jordan brand working on kids footwear, which was a really valuable experience because you face some unique challenges working on children's shoes that you don't face working on adult shoes. Because as a shoe changes size, a lot of things change about the shoe. The materials that you use in the shoe change, the construction of the shoe can change. And so learning how to move kind of up and down, not just the size scale, but choosing materials at every size, at every price point, helps you to develop this, what I call constrained creativity. Because if you have a full-size Air Jordan 1 and you're going to take it all the way down to a toddler's Air Jordan 1, when you sit those shoes together, they need to look like they go together. So in terms of the color execution, in terms of the construction, like obviously some things change because the shape of the foot changes, but those shoes have to sit together and look like they go together. And with the price points changing, you have less money to work to build a shoe. So I've got to use a material that looks like the adult material, but maybe doesn't have the same price point as the adult material. So you start learning how to say, okay, if this is my adult reference point, I can use these materials. And you may have to use two or three different materials depending on the size of the shoe to make sure that they're all not only maintaining the aesthetic that they need to maintain, but also hitting the cost points that they need to hit. Because at the end of the day, this is a business and you have those responsibilities to maintain cost effectiveness of the footwear. So I was in kids for about a year, and then my dream job opened up, which was promotional footwear developer. And that's what Andy was. He was the promotional footwear developer for Nike cleated footwear, so football and baseball. And that job opened up in Jordan brand. So one of the promotional footwear roles. And so what promotional footwear is the footwear that our athletes wear. So there's the footwear that goes to retail, but then there's the stuff you see when you turn on the TV. And for people who are familiar with sneakers and sneaker culture, they typically call those PEs or player exclusives. So there'll be of your favorite shoe that only a certain player wears, because that's their player exclusive version of the shoe. And so moving into a promotional footwear role, that's the stuff that you work on. So I've been in promotional footwear since about 2018, and I've had the opportunity to work on everything that we do. I worked on basketball shoes for our basketball athletes, was able to do some really, really exciting stuff and storytelling in the NBA. Worked on college basketball footwear, college football, cleats. And now I focus specifically on Major League Baseball and National Football League, cleated footwear for our athletes. And it's been absolutely amazing.
Oh, yeah.
What a journey, Forrest Gump.
That is no disrespectful to Forrest Gump, one of the greatest movie going around, but I reckon that's like my jaws are hurt. So,
oh, I've got a next question, but first, please can we get a quick photo of you smiling with the shoe and Pierre just like being Pierre? Smile. Thanks, guys.
All right, hold on a second. Is it over there? I'll be right back. All right, I'm back. Jillian, get the camera ready.
Oh. I'm absolutely ready.
So yeah, Pierre, I told you, my first project ever. So this is the Beast Mode Super Bowl shoe.
What? Oh, that's Beast Mode. That's Mr. Skittles, man. Are you serious?
Yes, like lifting it.
Oh, what? Oh, dude.
They always say you never forget your first, and yeah. Truer words have never been spoken.
You just had the most insane story, and thank you so much for sharing that with us. But you see, Pierre, now there are so many young people who are going to be listening to this, and they're just going to be like, tell me what I need to do to get to where you are now. So the next set of questions are probably just going to be like, seriously, what education you need,
yeah,
you know, out working hours and all this stuff, because you clearly have the coolest job ever. So let's help those young people get where you are now.
Cool. Let's give me some coworkers. Let's give me that next generation. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to part two of The Footwear Developer. In part three, we finally get down to business and discuss the ins and outs of the roles and give you the tools and advice that may help you land a similar role one day. Thanks for listening. Please join us again next episode as we explore yet another profession.
Your support is always appreciated, so please subscribe to Breaking Through Career Podcast and find us on social media.
Also, don't forget to check out the Resource Hub at www.breakingthroughcareers.com, where you can find advice for school leavers, university students, and career changers.
I did then what I knew how to do. Now that I know better, I do better. Maya Angelou.
See you next time.